Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit, Grosse Pointe, Michigan, and earned a BA from Georgetown University and a JD from the University of Detroit Mercy School of Law. From 1993 to 2008, he was Vice President and Corporate Secretary of Masco. And from 2003 to 2023, he was the Detroit Institute of Arts Board Chair. The DIA, one of the premier art museums in the U.S., is home to more than 65,000 works that comprise a multicultural survey of human creativity from ancient times through the 21st century. His name, Gene Gagaro. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're with Gene Gagaro. From 2003 to 2023, he was the board chair of the DIA. And many of his friends affectionately call him St. Gene. So, St. Gene, welcome. What an honor.
Jack, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Let's go back to your childhood. Let's start with your grandfather. He started a little business.
Well, that's right. My grandfather, Don Gargaro, started in the early 1900s, the Gargaro Construction Company, and had six sons, and became quite successful at it through hard work. And when my grandfather retired in the 50s, it was the then largest type of construction company in Michigan. And the sons carried it on for a number of years and built something called today the Avenue of Fashion, where I grew up at Livernois and Seven Mile. So great memories.
All right, on your mom's side, what about the grandfather on the mom's side?
Judge John P. Scallon was the longest-serving judge on the recorder's court bench and a real mentor for me as a youngster aspiring to be a lawyer. I would go and sit in my grandfather's courtroom and watch him in action, and a little different grandfather in the courtroom than he was out, but a real role model.
All right. What's the biggest thing you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
I was fortunate to have a great family. My father was very committed to his career in the construction business, and I was able to accompany him on many an occasion and saw him and how he built a great team for his company. And on the other side, of course, my mother was always there when you needed her, a great partner to my father. I had a sister, Carol, and the four of us were very, very close. They included us in many of the activities that they engaged in with their friends. So it was a real family affair.
You wear two rings. One is for an angel that God brought you. You met her in grade school.
That's correct. Mary Ann and I will be married 55 years this April 11th. I better remember that date. And it's been just a marvelous thing for me. And she's been everything and more that I could ask for. Great mother of our two children, Lauren, who lives in Greenwich, Connecticut, with her husband, Michael, and our two granddaughters, and our son, Gene, who's here in Detroit. And Mary Ann's been my cheerleader, counselor, and companion, and it's just been, I've been very, very fortunate.
I went to Google the other day, and I wrote in class and grace, and a picture of Mary Ann came up.
Well, that would not surprise me. She's been very involved herself in a number of things, from teaching in Detroit's inner city when we first met volunteering, became very involved, of course, at the Detroit Institute of Arts, where she chaired the American Wing Board, and then received a wonderful recognition when we were both honored by the museum for all of the different activities we engaged in there. But we had a real partnership, and I was, as I say, I was very fortunate to have her in my corner when I needed her.
All right. You wear a second ring, a tiny ring. What's that ring for?
Well, it's a ring that I hope can be updated soon, but it has a 1957 Detroit Lions World Championship date on it. And in that year, I was fortunate to be, I like to think at my age, people might even believe that I was on the team. But when they ask the pertinent question, well, what did you do? I have to admit that I was the then water boy for the Detroit Lions, and still have wonderful memories of that experience, of course, with some of the great people I was able to associate with, travel with, and become friends with.
Bobby Lane, you got to tell us a story.
How long do we have? Bobby Lane was just what you've heard about him, a leader, highly regarded by all the players, but a competitor to the core. I remember some nights when we would travel with the team, Bobby Lane would always volunteer to take the water boys to dinner, and shortly after that he disappeared. And we were on our own, but many of the stories I can validate. He was just a remarkable competitor, athlete, and leader for that team.
We're talking to Gene Gagaro. When we come back, we'll talk about his 26-year career with a little law company called Dykema. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Gene Gagaro. From 1967 to 1993, you were a senior member of the Dykema Law Firm. Talk about that chapter in your life.
Well, it's a wonderful chapter in my legal career. When I started, the firm was Dykema, Gossett, Spencer, Goodnow, and Trigg. We had 30 lawyers. I knew all the lawyers, of course, and most of their families. When I left in 1993 to go to Masco Corporation, we had more than 300 lawyers. The firm had changed significantly with offices around the country, and still a remarkable group of professionals. I had the benefit of some wonderful mentors, as you would expect. And it prepared me very, very well to take on my next career at Masco Corporation when I left Dykema in 1993.
You'd been there 26 years. Why did you ever leave and go to this company called Masco Corporation?
It was not easy. I remember explaining the answer to that question to some of my colleagues at the Dykema firm, and it was a tough sell. But I thought at the time that I had this opportunity working with Richard Manoogian and the great team he had assembled at Masco Corporation would be another chapter in my career, and I basically became a business executive rather than practicing law. But the legal background was very, very helpful. And I was fortunate to join the team at Masco and work closely with Richard until probably 2008 or 9, when I retired as an officer, and I today serve as president of the Manoogian Foundation.
Legendary name, Richard Manoogian. Tell us about Mr. Manoogian.
Again, someone I look back on as a person that was remarkable to work with intellectually, strategically a great builder of companies, and I think over the years had acquired some 60 companies at Masco Corporation, in addition to having a terrific group of executives to work with. Not only was he a business personality and leader, but a consummate volunteer for the city of Detroit, as you might know, chaired the board at the Detroit Institute of Arts for 12, 14 years. On the side, became the foremost collector of American art in the country, and other things that he enjoyed collecting. So hard to keep ahead of him. I was always three steps behind.
I don't think so. All right. Tell us about Masco. 60 companies.
A fascinating time to be there, as I recall. Started with Alex Manoogian, Richard's father, inventor of the single-handle Delta faucet. And then when Richard joined in the late 50s, he took a $14 million annual sales company to a $12 billion or more annual sales company over a period of 40 years. And just a fascinating experience to, as a lawyer, observe the process, not from just the closing standpoint, but from the strategic standpoint of why acquire this company? How will it fit into our family of companies? And I mention family because when Masco acquired a company, you joined a family. Today it could be different, but in those days you joined because you continued to run your company with other similarly situated entrepreneurs. So it was truly a family experience.
You and Marianne have done a lot for me. One of which was a couple times I got invited to a little function at the Masco headquarters right by 94 and Telegraph. And you walk the hallways, and here's, it's almost like being in the Louvre. The art on the walls were unbelievable.
Best kept secret for a long time that we housed that collection on Van Born Road, you're correct. Over the years, we began having more public activities at the company, and that that became a museum stop that many people wanted to have and come back. And Richard would say that our acquisition affinity was built because he needed bigger space to hang his art. And it was truly amazing to have art throughout the building and in your offices of just remarkable provenance.
In the 80s, he asked you to get involved with this entity called the Detroit Institute of Arts, just down the street from us. How did you first get involved?
The Detroit Institute of Arts, obviously well known around the world. I started serving on the board in the 90s as a volunteer just to observe how Richard ran the museum's board at the time. In the late 90s, the then governor, John Engler, asked me to become the chair of the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs. In that role, I was able to tour Michigan on behalf of the council and saw firsthand how revered the Detroit Institute of Arts was. Whether you were in Marquette or in Grand Rapids, it was the place to go to see great art. In the early part of 2003, Richard said one day when we were meeting, he had served for 14 years as board chair, would I like to try it for a couple of years? And as I think I've mentioned, when the chairman of the company asks you for that kind of opportunity, you say, when do I start?
And a couple years turned into 21 years.
Well, so. It's as I look back, it was remarkable. Starting then, we were just opening the new DIA in 2007 after a $160 million makeover, adding new galleries and space. In 2008, of course, we went into the financial crisis, and I had to lay off a third of the staff at the museum. In 2010, Governor Snyder stopped funding the arts, given the situation in Michigan at the time. So in 2012, we were fortunate to pass a historic tri-county millage among Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb County and form some marvelous partnerships that we still enjoy today.
We're talking to Gene Gagaro. When we come back, we're going to talk about those three or four things he just mentioned casually in the next segment. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Gene Gagaro. If you want to learn more, www.dia.org. DIA.org. All right. 65,000 pieces of art. Where do you keep them all?
Well, the art is basically housed in the institution, but what you see is just a small percentage of the collection, of course. It's renowned worldwide as an encyclopedic museum, meaning the collection includes just about everything you would expect to see. I was fortunate to serve with two wonderful directors, Graham Beal and then Salvador Salort Pons, who continues to lead the museum today with a great team of outstanding, committed, and dedicated people.
All right. We've got one piece of art. It's a self-portrait, I think from 1887, from a guy named Van Gogh. It's his first painting to enter a U.S. museum. And then we've got something else called the Diego Rivera. Talk about those two treasures.
Again, I won't do it justice in talking about those treasures, but the Diego Rivera murals are world famous and draw visitors from around the world. It's a real treat to just stand in that area and watch people see that, have that experience for the first time. Just remarkable. That was done in the 30s with the oversight and blessing of Edsel Ford, who was the then patron and leader at the Detroit Institute of Arts, among many other things he did. The Van Gogh portrait, one of the very first portraits to hang in a U.S. museum, the first, was the first of five in the collection. And recently, when we hosted 65 Van Goghs from around the world, the museum, I'm quite sure, had over 250,000 visitors for that exhibition. An amazing experience, but very, very appropriate given our history.
You mentioned in the last segment you became the board chair in 2003, and you served that phenomenally well for 21 years. And the DIA was in the middle of a $140 million addition and renovation, and one day you learned the word asbestos.
I remember it well. I was sitting with the chair of our building committee, a fellow who was pretty well known in the real estate world, Alfred Taubman.
And you throw these names like they mean nothing. You know that, Gene?
The construction foreman came in and said, "Mr. Taubman, we've got some unsettling news. We've discovered asbestos in the building." And long and the short of it, $40 million later, we had reconstructed, taken down the walls of the museum, taken all the asbestos out, and that became a big part of our building and renovation challenge. But successfully, we were able to do it. Alfred Taubman was remarkable leader and loved Detroit and the Institute, and he was the difference.
Okay. You mentioned a man named Gran Beal, a native of Great Britain, and he became director, president, and CEO of the DIA in 99. Tell us a little bit about Gran Beal.
Graham was a scholar's scholar, loved art, did for the DIA an amazing job in reinstalling all the art after our renovation and expansion. As I said earlier, we had 90 galleries when we were finished, so reallocating and reinstalling the art that would be recognized around the world for the style and the manner in which it was now viewable was Graham's very, very important gift to the DIA.
You've given a lot of gifts to the DIA. You mentioned that, I think in 2010, Governor Rick Snyder came to you and said, "I'm sorry, I can't keep giving, Michigan can't keep giving you money. We're just in bad straits." So in 2002, you lead an effort called the Regional Millage, where you wanted residents in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties to basically give a little bit of their tax dollars each year. The name of the show is With God's Anything Is Possible, but L. Brooks Patterson would have told you, that's impossible, Gene. Ain't going to happen. How'd you do it?
Well, it's interesting you mention Brooks, because he was one of the very first people that I went to speak with about this possibility. Brooks and I were in law school together. Brooks was a very successful then Oakland County executive, and the Detroit Zoo, located in Oakland County, had done the same millage in 2008. So in 2012, the zoo was very helpful in giving me the playbook for how they did that. We didn't have giraffes or tigers to offer in the Rivera Court, but we had an educational experience that was second to none. So I approached the members of the teaching community in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb. We had a great team doing this. And the teachers came on board and were our marketing team to take this millage message public. So when the actual vote occurred in August of 2012, we won Wayne County, Oakland County, of course, and Macomb County was up for grabs, but in the end, we prevailed in Macomb County. And as I said earlier, the millage dollars are important, of course, but the relationships we have today with Dave Coulter in Oakland County, Warren Evans in Wayne County, and Mark Hackle in Macomb County are invaluable. And there are marketing departments today. They really understand the benefit of our partnership.
We're talking to St. Gene Gagaro. If you want to learn more, www.dia.org. The Jewish carpenter taught us a lot of things. One of the biggest things he gave us was the 8 Beatitudes. And friends, the one, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." If you don't believe that that's possible today, just meet Gene Gagaro. You live that every day. So today, I think 65% of the museum operations come from that regional millage. So, okay, 2015, you promote a man to become the new director, president, and CEO of the DIA. Tell us about him.
Salvador Salort Pons was a curator at the museum for a number of years. Before that time, I was very impressed with his enthusiasm, his people skills, and his scholarship. So when Graham retired in 2015, Salvador, of course, was a candidate. We had a very good search committee and interviewed a number of very qualified candidates, some sitting museum directors from around the country, and in the end selected Salvador in 2015, and it's hard to believe he's coming up on his 10th anniversary there, but his reign has been featured by the post-bankruptcy period, which was quite unsettling because we were coming out of a very significant financial commitment. It impacted our fundraising going forward for a period of time. Salvador became a very good fundraiser and ambassador. And as I said earlier, for what Graham Beal did inside the DIA in reinstalling the collection, Salvador has done outside the museum in building relationships with political, business, educational, and the broad Michigan community. Has built a great team, and the last 2 years, I'm bragging now, the DIA has been voted the number one art museum in the United States by a survey of USA Today readers around the United States.
We're talking to Gene Gagaro. If you want to learn more, www.dia.org. When we come back, since we're talking about art, I'm going to ask you to paint us a picture, a financial picture, of the city of Detroit in 2013. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Rasula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're with St. Gene Gagaro, from 2003 to 2023. He was the board chair of the DIA. Gene, paint for us a picture, a financial picture, of the city of Detroit in 2013.
Well, Dave Bing, if I recall correctly, was the then mayor. But in January of 2013, Governor Snyder appointed Kevin Orr as the emergency manager, and the clouds on the horizon were very threatening in many instances. Early in 2013, the Orr team came to me and said, "Gene, we want to protect the DIA because it appears to be the only asset that the city of Detroit owns, in addition to the water department and the electrical department, both of which are in tough straits." A month or two later, they came back and said, unfortunately, we misspoke. We can't protect the DIA. It's going to be part of the bankruptcy settlement, and we want you to help us monetize the art. So, obviously, we prepared for a legal battle, which took from early 2013 to the end of 2014 when the grand bargain was fashioned. But there were some amazing times during those 2 years, Jack, where the museum was featured in the Detroit media and the headlines as not participating, not wanting to help find a solution. All of that was strategically on our part done by design, so we would understand where we could best help.
We had Judge Jerry Rosen a couple months ago, you know, and he's written a book, The Grand Bargain, and he made the statement that Detroit was service delivery insolvent. The only asset they had was the art of the DIA. So let's go to Governor Rick Snyder. And he gave the state, he gave $350 million toward this. Miriam Nolan and 13 foundations gave $370 million. And then you had a breakfast in Washington, D.C. one day. You referred to it as the most expensive breakfast in history. Please.
Then Judge Rosen was confiding in me the wonderful news you've just mentioned about the state of Michigan and the foundation community, and said, Gene, the DIA has to have some skin in this game in order for it to work. So I went to our board and explained the framework. We were not in a position, we didn't have discretionary funds laying around that we could offer, but we understood the opportunity. Long and the short of it, I was authorized to offer Governor Snyder $50 million.
50.
Correct. Didn't have any idea where we were going to raise $50 million. But anyhow, he invited me to Washington, D.C., the governor, for a breakfast where he was receiving an award for art from the National Mayor's Conference. After breakfast, he and I met. I was prepared, I thought. I was waiting for him to say, and now, Gene, we need you to lead the museum into this contribution effort. I think I interrupted him and said, Governor, I have some wonderful news for you. I'm prepared to offer $50 million from the DIA. And he said to me, Gene, I understand how difficult that is to raise that kind of funding. I'll even help you do that if I can. But I need $100 million. I thought, you know, I could go back to Detroit and convene the board and try and make the sale for this number. But I also thought, here's the leader of the state of Michigan asking me for help. He's raising money from 83 counties around the state of Michigan. Long and the short of it, I said, Rick, we're in. I can't tell you where I'm going to raise the 50, let alone the 100, but glad to help as best we can. I went back to Detroit, a long plane ride home from Washington, wondering how I was going to broach that subject with the board. But 2 days later, we had a board meeting, and every board member raised their hand in favor of our raising that money.
And between GM, Ford, and Chrysler, they gave $26 million. Then a man who doesn't really care about art said, I'll give you $10 million. And that person was?
I had the opportunity to meet with Roger Penske, who cares greatly about Detroit and Michigan, and was doing things that no one knew about to help the city for years. Of course, the Super Bowl back in 2006 was just one of those. After hearing my plea, he said something along the lines, I'm not really an art guy, Gene, but I do believe in order to have a great city, you have to have art and culture.
Okay. People that get great credit for this, the bankruptcy, Governor Rick Snyder, Danny Gilbert, Kevin Orr, Rip Rapson, the Honorable Stephen Rhodes, Honorable Victoria Roberts, Honorable Jerry Rosen. But there's another person behind the scenes that also played a huge role. And her name is Marianne Gagaro.
Well, that's wonderful for you to say that, and it's true. There were times in those 2 years that I mentioned to you where the situation was looking quite dire, and surrounded by lawyers and business people and others who were saying, you know, it's really time to sell a Van Gogh or two, Gene, and put some real money on the table. I would go home in the evening, and Marianne would greet me to say, what's this I hear about selling art? That can't happen, because that's just the beginning once you start that down that path. Have you thought about the following? And she would name three or four other options. And we had a rule in our house that after 8:30 p.m. at night, the DIA would not be discussed. Well, by 10 o'clock most evening, she had finished her list of things I had to do the next day. And it gave me great incentive and momentum to go out and continue the work with the great team we had. But she was instrumental in her advocacy to get this done right.
As our time winds down together, on November 20th, 2024, we had this gala 10-year celebration of the grand bargain. At the DIA, when you put your head on the pillow that night, Gene, what did you think about?
I was so thrilled to see all those wonderful participants back looking so well, with one exception, of course, Eugene Dreiker wasn't with us. But it was very gratifying. And to see what Mayor Mike Duggan has done since 2014 during that 10-year period, and the city, how it's thrived, and how the museum has contributed to that success, very, very gratifying. I hope we can do it 10 more years from now.
Gene Gagaro, you're a shining example of the value of humility and hard work. Thanks for all you do.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jack, and anything is possible.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Crisullo. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spot.
Believe in yourself.